Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you once again on a Monday evening, talking all things Nashville Predators for the next hour. Slapshot Radio coming up at 7, so you'll have a couple hours of Preds talk here this evening on the program. And joining me for Preds Insiders this evening is an old friend of ours and a voice that, if you've been listening to Preds Insiders for any length of time, you certainly know this voice. It is the one, the only, Jeremy K. Gover. Gover, how the heck are you, man?
Porth, I'm great, man. Hey, congratulations on your nuptials, or
Thank
your re-nuptials.
You.
I don't know how you count that, but congratulations on that. I'm thrilled to be sharing the hour with you tonight, sir.
Well, thank you for joining us. And first of all, I have to ask, how's retirement going for you?
Well, as you know, it's a semi-retirement, meaning that I initially walked away from all my, you know, responsibilities, if you will, in the sports landscape world. But I realized right before I quit my AP Radio gig, which for those who don't know, I'm the Nashville correspondent for AP Radio. So if Tom Brady's coming to town or something, AP Radio will say, "Hey, can you go cover that game?" And I go, "Okay." So it's a very on-call basis, right? So long story short is, I said, you know, before I quit that, I was like, you know, that gig is the exact opposite of what I was leaving for. Like, I was leaving because it was an every game responsibility, and I work a day job, obviously, and then I go, you know, hopefully 41 times plus more, down to Bridgestone every year, and it just got to be a wear and tear on my family and all that. This is the opposite. This is like 5 or 6 times a year, like a calendar year. And so I was like, let me just keep this gig. That'll at least keep my toe in the water. And, you know, I'll cover 2 or 3 Preds games this year and everything will be fine. Well, they end up making the playoffs, obviously, which is obviously great. And I got to cover all those games. And I'm just thrilled to still have some sort of toe in the Nashville sports landscape water, if you will.
Well, always, you're always welcome on this program. And excited to talk some Preds with you here for the next hour, because I know you watched every game just like...
Very much so. Just like
you did beforehand. And... you know, we'll get to the Predators here in a little bit and the future of Pecorine, but I know you've also been watching the Stanley Cup playoffs, and two individuals that Predators fans know very well are both two wins away from an appearance in the Stanley Cup final. Barry Trotz, head coach of the New York Islanders, and Shea Weber, the captain of the Montreal Canadiens. It's cool to see both individuals have this much success. I'm intrigued by the question of which of the two are fans rooting for more, because I think Barry Trotz was so beloved, and I don't think anybody has a bad thing to say about him at all. You can say the same thing about Shea Weber, but I don't know if there was the same city wrapping their arms around Shea Weber the way that it was with Barry Trotz. So I'm very curious to know what you think that might pan out with Barry Trotz and Shea Weber, and who Preds fans are rooting for more.
I tweeted about this when Montreal advanced. I just said I would just love it. As somebody who's covered this team for 11 years, I would just love to see a Shea Weber versus Barry Trotz Stanley Cup final. Now, admittedly, it does lose a little bit of luster, which, let's be real, Trotzy will take. That Trotzy's already won a cup, right?
Sure.
So when he was with Washington, he got that big monkey off his back, and he and Mitch Korn and the whole crew, right? That was just, and then the city of Nashville rejoiced with him, and it was great. Had he not won a cup, oh boy, this would be, I think, quite a debate. Who do you want to see? But kind of like when Scott Niedermeyer's parents got to see. Niedermeyer mom and dad got to see Scott play, Rob in the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, well, which son do you root for? Right. It's kind of like that. So,
right.
But I think Shea Weber, I think he gets. I would rather see him win at this point, He's 35. He'll be 36 by the time next season starts. He spent 11 years in gold, or a blue before that. And he was just, you know, obviously he was the captain. He's the first homegrown captain. All, the whole resume that we've gone on and on about. But here's the kicker. One, yes, Trotz has already won a cup, and so you kind of want to, I'd like to see Weber get one. But also, Weber's never been to this point in the playoffs. I don't believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's never been to the second round, to the third round of the playoffs before.
That is correct.
So if you have that, and then you also have the fact that when he was traded, PK Subban, the guy he was traded for, immediately led the Predators to the Stanley Cup final right after that. So it was just, so he said he was rooting for the Predators, you know, and all that, and that was obviously a really great thing to say. So it's kind of like I'd like him to get his shine, right? Mm-hmm. I would like to see Shea Weber get there. Got to get through Vegas first, of course, which is no tall task. But I would like to see Shea Weber come out on top.
I mean, how cool would it be for Shea Weber to be the captain of the Montreal Canadiens?
Right. Yeah.
Win the
most
Stanley
storied
Cup.
Franchise in National Hockey League history, and he's hoisting the cup.
Right.
The captain hoists the cup, for those who don't know. So he would have the picture. Gary Bettman would be handing him the cup.
That would be pretty stinking cool, even if the collateral damage with it would be another cup for Corey Perry.
Right, which I also tweeted about. I was elated that Shea Weber, you know, just the excitement that Shea Weber could finally win a cup was so great. But at the same time, it really sucked that went hand in hand with whatever he wins, Corey Perry will also win. So,
well, you know, there's no villain on the Islanders where there's that collateral damage. So that's an interesting wrinkle within this conversation. Let's talk about the hockey for a second. Which of the two underdogs, because these two are with the underdogs in the series still, even though the series are tied 2-2, it's a pair of best of three series in the Stanley Cup semifinals. So, for you, Gover, which of the two teams is more likely to pull the upset?
If you'd asked me before the series started, I would have said the Islanders. I think their defense is too good. Trotsky, of course, has been there before, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But right now, I think it's Montreal. And they didn't. This is going to be kind of a doesn't really hold water argument for just one second, because they didn't prove that last night. But go with me on this. I think when there's a question mark in goal, so when you have Fleury going in, he obviously plays his tail off, you know, whatever, he's a Vezina Trophy finalist, all that stuff. And then, but they have to go to Leonard to win in that game in this series against Montreal, right? So to tie the series 2-2. Because there's a goaltender controversy, quote air quotes for radio, there, I think that creates the question mark. I think if Montreal can get to either goaltender bad in any one game the rest of the way, I think it creates doubt on the team. It doesn't. You don't have that same reliability confidence anymore. And I think that just enough of that at this stage, Porth, you know this, at this stage of the game, just that one crack of confidence can cost you a series.
Well,
and considering it's a 2-2 series right now, I mean, you know, so I'm going to go Montreal.
I'll play devil's advocate on that point. Because you think back to the cup run that the Predators made during the Eastern Conference Final opposite the Preds beating the Ducks. Wasn't that the series where Marc-Andre Fleury got multiple starts against the Senators, but at some point in that series, the Senators chased him and they went back to Matt Murray and they ended up winning that series in seven?
Yes, and I'll also throw one more log on your fire.
Okay.
So I'll agree with your devil's advocate for a second and just say the Chicago series that the Predators played in when Scott Darling came in and won the series for them.
Yeah, when they played musical chairs.
Yeah, and then Scott Darling got replaced in the second round and then all the way to the cup final and won the cup. So yeah, I'm not saying my argument's bulletproof.
Sure.
I'm just saying that at this stage of the game, when there's four teams left, four, everybody else is gone. When there's four teams left and you're that close to the end, I think any kind of crack in the armor can create a leak in the dam. And I think if you're Montreal, that's what you got to go for. You got to pour it on early and often and hope to get in their heads just enough. Next thing you know, you're in the Stanley Cup final.
So I would agree with you on the point that now that we have seen these series play out in four games each so far, that I feel differently about this question than I would have going into this round. where New York, I was like, they could easily push Tampa to 7 because there's something special going on with the Islanders, which I still feel like could happen for sure. But you're seeing a little bit of pressure now on Vegas with how they lost game 3, where Marc-Andre Fleury misplays the puck. Montreal ties it. They win it in overtime. Right. And the fact that Vegas came back and won in a somewhat similar fashion last night in game 4 to take back home ice, I think is an important thing for Vegas moving forward in this series. But the Islanders don't have Carey Price, and Tampa Bay has that championship resolve within them that Vegas does not have. And I think that's why I would probably go with Montreal over New York in terms of which team is more likely to pull the upset at this point in time.
Tampa Bay is clearly, in my opinion, the most complete team, right? I mean, their offense is lights out. They have one of the best defenses in the league, right? I think there was an NHL PA players poll, which NHLP, that's redundant, but the NHLPA poll and players took a survey about who is the best defenseman, all-around defenseman in the National Hockey League. So voted on by his peers, it was Victor Hedman by like an overwhelming margin, right? So they've got him. Ryan McDonough's no slouch. It's right on down the line. And then, of course, you've got, oh, I don't know, an all-world goaltender in Andrei Vasilevsky. So they're the most complete team for sure. And you can't use the argument of they just won the cup last year. You know, they're not going to be as hungry this year because they're already in the Final Four. So, I mean, at this point, I mean, you know, you might as well go ahead and win the whole damn thing, right? So, yeah. It's not that they would have phoned it in, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's so hard to repeat that, you know, if one thing leads to another, you kind of not pack it in, but you know, there's not that hunger isn't there. And that's certainly not the case anymore. But I do think the Islanders have a release. They're built on defense. They've got some offensive weapons that can chip in, obviously. And Varlamov's no slouch. He's a great goaltender.
Sure.
But I do agree with you that I do think that Montreal has the more likely chance for the reasons I said earlier, but also for those reasons right there. If Tampa Bay is the most complete team, then you kind of have to pick them to win, right? I mean, you want to pick the Islanders if you're a Trotz fan or whatever, but, you know, or if you don't want to see a repeat, you know, but I think Montreal has the better chance.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I still think it ends up being Bolts Knights, which would be one heck of a Stanley Cup final if it does turn out to be Vegas Tampa.
It would be, but let's be real here. Nobody outside of Vegas wants the Vegas Golden Knights to win the Stanley Cup this early in their franchise history.
Well,
they didn't pay their dues like anybody else. That's a whole other conversation. I get that. I'm not going to dive into that. I'm just going to just remind everybody that they're only in the, I think it's year 4, or maybe year 3, something like that. Like they have no, they've year been in the Stanley Cup final before, and I get that. But to win the cup, it's a tad too early. Let's pay some dues first before we get to that point.
Well, you know, some people might have a little bit of coin on the Vegas Golden Knights to hoist.
They might, and that's smart for
Lord
them.
Stanley. So those people may not mind the Vegas Golden Knights winning 16 playoff games. I'm just saying.
Let me rephrase. If outside of Vegas or invested parties, nobody wants
sure.
to see.
Okay. Golden I like that edit. That's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pekka Rinne, there's a whole lot of talk still about what he's going to do because we don't know yet. You know, David Poile said after the season that he still needed to talk with Pekka Rinne, and we don't know whether that conversation has taken place or not. It certainly felt in game 56 that night against the Carolina Hurricanes, it certainly felt in that moment that that was it for him, at least in a Nashville Predators uniform. I was a little surprised to hear Pekka Rinne leave the door open on another NHL team when he spoke with the media after the season. I still would be flabbergasted if Pekka Rinne signed with another NHL team. I pretty much think it's either come back to Nashville or go over to Finland to continue his NHL career over there and start more games and not have the wear and tear of the NHL grind. So for you, Gover, where do you stand with this in terms of what you're expecting out of Pekka Rinne and what's next for him?
So I have a two-part answer to this. The first part answer is that I selfishly, and I'm sure most of Nashville would agree, I selfishly want him back as the backup to the Nashville Predators next season for one more year, because I think he's too close to some ridiculous milestones that could possibly cement him as a Hall of Famer at some point. Maybe not first ballot, or maybe even second ballot, but eventually, because of what he's done for the goaltending factory in Finland, and et cetera, et cetera. For those who don't know, he's currently 19th all-time. All-time! 100-plus year league history. He's currently 19th all-time in wins with 369, and he only needs, quick math, 22 to tie Ryan Miller for 14th all-time, who just retired at the end of last year. Now, will he win 22 games in a backup role? Probably not, okay? But my point is he can climb up the ladder. He can pass Dominic Hasek. I mean, that's possible. I mean, so there's some selfish reasons that I'd love to see him come back. Now, that being said, I'm going to talk to you in realism now, and that is that I don't believe you do a send-off like that, or accept a send-off. If you're Pecorino and you accept a send-off like that, you go pitch a shutout, that's fine. That's great. The storybook, that's wonderful. But for the scratched players to make sure that they were on the bench for the little victory lap, if you will.
Sure.
That, to me, means he is not coming back. That's what that... Or that it's a very strong possibility that he might not come back. Right? Like an overwhelm, like 90% sure. He's told everybody 90% sure that he's not coming back. That is what that means to me. Because you don't have that if you're truly like, man, I just really don't know, you know, you don't accept your teammates saying, go take a lap, man. I think he said Brad Richardson, I think, if I remember correctly, Brad Richardson was the one that said, this never happens, go take a lap, mm-hmm. or whatever. And so he did. Well, if you are truly not sure if you're going to retire or not, you don't take that, in my opinion. You go, no, let's go back to we'll be fine. We got the playoffs to go. He even said that in the post-game press conference. We got playoffs to get to. Let's go back in the room and get ready for playoffs. But they made him take a lap. So, again, the telltale sign for me was not necessarily the victory lap. It was the fact that the scratch players felt the need to be out there.
Well, and it was his status and his future was kind of an elephant in the room surrounding UC Saros' amazing second half. And he ended up being snubbed of being a Vezina finalist.
Right.
But that was the elephant in the room amidst all that, was that your legendary goaltender is riding the pine for, you know, 90, 95% of this second half, where the team just keeps, you know, winning games, and they're a buzzsaw through, you know, most of the Central Division at that point. So go ahead.
I was going to say, just let me say one thing. I'll relate it to me, okay? The listeners can't see this, but you can, Porth, because I'm on Zoom. This bobblehead right here was given to me by the Preds Media Relations staff when
we
I retired.
We can hear it.
We talked about my semi-retirement earlier, right? Okay, so how bad did I... They gave me this going-away present. It was like this big thing. I really appreciated it. I was, you know, practically crying in the car driving home. Like, this, that was the last Preds practice I was going to be at right before they went to the bubble, etc. Okay, they gave me this great gift. Can you imagine my embarrassment when I now have to say, hey, the AP radio wants me to cover this game, like three games into the next season? I mean, that's just me being a journalist, being a radio guy. Think if you're a professional athlete, right? And so you go have that send-off, all the players want you to do it, hey, go do it. And then you're like, you know what? Nope, I'm going to go ahead and come back. I mean, it just seems awkward. That's all I'm saying. So to me, again, I just really think if you look at read all the tea leaves or whatever, I just think that's... he is done, at least in Nashville. And I agree with you, by the way. It would be a shame if he were to put on another jersey. That being said, he wins a cup wherever he goes. I could care less.
I think there would be a lot of people in this town that feel the same way. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. This is Preds Insiders. We'll obviously be keeping tabs on Pecorine moving forward here as the offseason draws closer and closer to mid-July, when everything will start happening. And speaking of mid-July, the Seattle Kraken will have their expansion draft. What will be the Predators' approach, and how does Matt Duchene figure into those plans? That's coming up next. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. It's Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in. It's Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth and Jeremy K. Gover here with you on this Monday evening. Slapshot Radio coming up at 7 o'clock. Preds Insiders is brought to you every week by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. So before the break, Gover, I teased about the expansion draft and what the Predators' approach should be when in mid-July they're going to have to make their decision on who they are going to protect from the expansion draft. And it's going to be a very, very fascinating process for David Poile and company, because I think anybody on the outside looking in would look at the contracts and say, oh, well, you got to keep like more than four, five, six forwards, because there are a lot of forwards on the books that you would think or should have more value than they actually do. And if you're David Poile, you also have four to five defensemen that you might want to keep, and you can't, or I should say protect and not keep, but you can't protect four to five defensemen in addition to five or six forwards. So it's either seven forwards, three defensemen, one goalie, or eight skaters and one goalie. And the eight skaters opens up the opportunity for you to keep more than three defensemen. So, Jeremy K. Gover, I'm putting you in the shoes of David Poile. How are you approaching next month with the expansion draft?
I am calling Ron Francis. I probably already have. And I am saying, let's get a foundation going here. What would it take for you to take Ryan Johansson in the expansion draft? What would we need to give you to sweeten the pot in order to do so? And separately, what would it take for you to take Matt Duchene in the expansion draft? How do we need to sweeten the pot in order for you to take Matt Duchene off our hands as well? So I'd start there. Now, they're going to come at you with, oh, first round pick or, you know, whatever it is. And I don't believe it's that high. But here's something that I do think is very interesting. And I tweeted about this on May 28th. I think you offer Dante Fabbro. Here's why. Johansson, I actually, if I'm the Predators, I want to keep. I know what I have in Johansson. He needs to be better during the regular season. There's no excuse for that. I get that. But when push comes to shove, he's a tremendous teammate. The team looks better with him in the lineup, even during the regular season. And he's a playoff performer, time and time again. So, for Matt Duchene, I offer them Dante Fabbro. That would give them a second-pairing defenseman who's on the rise in the National Hockey League and who's highly coveted on their expansion defense core. But the Predators can survive that because Carrier has emerged as a, without question, NHL defenseman. He kind of came out of nowhere, almost like out of emergency, you know, where he kind of got stashed away in Milwaukee/Chicago for the past 4 or 5, it seems like 10 years. And then he finally gets a chance and he's just like, whoa, you know? And so with that being said, Carrier has shown he belongs. So that makes Fabbro, in my opinion, expendable. So therefore, you can kind of not kill two birds with one stone because you would love to keep Fabbro. But if you want Duchene's contract off the books in its entirety and you want to kind of wash your hands of that situation, which I do believe the Predators should do, I think you make it you make it so sweet that they have to take it, which is they're going to get to the salary cap floor anyway. So you go, okay, well, we'll give you Duchene off the expansion draft. If you pick him, we will also give you Dante Fabbro. And I think you go that way.
I have not thought of Dante Fabbro, and I did not see your tweet on May 28th. So I do apologize for not seeing your tweet about that.
You don't need to apologize. It was a
that
buried
was a
rant,
bit that was I, a busy I, weekend for the Porths. Okay,
yeah, it was. That's right.
so you have the gears turning here because you're not going to get away with just giving up a fourth or fifth round pick to have Seattle take Matt Duchene. If that's
you'd
the
love
route
to.
That you want to go.
You'd love to, but right,
ideal world, yes, but I think Seattle at that point would have the leverage in those conversations. So you bring up an interesting point because Eric DeHatchick with The Athletic in their little expansion mock draft for Seattle said that Seattle could take Matt Duchene along with a first-round pick for from the Nashville Predators. So, if you're David Poile, and you're deciding between those two, you're either trading a former first-round pick that you've had in the system for a few years. You probably like some things that he does. You probably want to see Fabro improve in other areas, and who knows if Fabro will be a consistent. You mentioned a second-pair defenseman. I mean, right now, Fabro's is really a third-pair defenseman with the ceiling of a second-pair defenseman. And I don't think it's a guarantee that Fabro is going to get there to be a consistent second-pair defenseman in the league. I think taking a step back, you also have to ask, is what we saw from Alex Carrier for the last two plus months of the season, is that truly what Carrier is going to be moving forward, or is this another John Blum situation? Because John Blum came in the 10-11 season late in the year, where it was already, you know, kind of late bloomer-ish with Jonathan Blum. And he came in, played very well into the playoffs. And there were high hopes for him going forward. And he completely just spun out. I mean, his NHL career ended up in the AHL within like 2 years after that great playoff performance. So is Carrier John Blum 2.0? Or did we actually see something from him down the stretch that's going to stick around long term? I think you have to make that assessment with the proposal that you're making as well.
I don't disagree with that. And I clearly I'm not saying Carrier is like the answer. Okay. What I'm saying is all a player can do, right, is show up, play his heart out, and all of a sudden the talent and the work ethic all come together, and you're like, this kid belongs. Okay. In my opinion, bust or not, Carrier he's on the opening night roster next season. That's how good he was in his cup of coffee of 2.5 months or 2 months, whatever it ended up being. In the playoffs, he didn't take a step back. Yes, all rookies at this level are going to make a bonehead move every once in a while. But overall, I'd say, 85% of the time, Carrier looked like he belonged. And a lot of times he was playing on that top pair. So that he deserves a shot. And I mean a real shot. So, yes, John Blum did as well. But again, those players can't predict the future. The executives can't predict the future. All they can do is set themselves up for success. And in my opinion, you'd love to have Fabro, but this is a unique situation. This is a chance where you can... I mean, Fabro's stock isn't exactly hot right now. I wouldn't say that. But I would say, okay, well, actually, you know what? I'll take your point, Porth. I'll flip it around for you. Then you give him Carrier then. You give him Carrier and to take Duchesne. Now you have Fabro, the guy who's played at the NHL level on your team for a few years, and you kind of feel good about him. So either one, what I'm saying is the principle is the same. Whichever defenseman you believe in, you keep. And the other one, you strike while the iron is so-called hot, depending on who you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Like Fabro, he's well-respected around the league in the sense that he could grow up, again, air quotes for radio, and be a second-pairing defenseman. His stock is relatively that high. So why not throw him in the mix and try to kind of say, well, we kind of think he's a third-pair defenseman, and he does kind of make some mental mistakes sometimes. But let's not tell Seattle that. Let's just cloud their judgment with this good stuff, right? That's attractive to an expansion team that's not named Las Vegas, who just won a Stanley Cup final in their first year, right? So we're also clouding the judgment. This is a separate topic. I'll just touch on it for 5 seconds. We're also a lot of people, I think, are wrongfully assuming that Seattle is going to be another Vegas, that they're going to be a playoff team right from the get-go, and I cannot tell you how ridiculous that sounds to me. Yes, the expansion rules are different than they were in the 90s and the early 2000s, but it's insanely ridiculous that Vegas got that far. So I have to assume Seattle will be a normal expansion team, and they're going to need young talent to cultivate. And I think Fabro, or Carrier, to your point, is the a really good pot sweetener to take Duchesne.
So certainly an interesting conundrum there. With the Fabro thing, you're either giving up a former first-round pick or a first-round pick, which is the mystery box. Fabro's not as much of a mystery box anymore. So let me throw this at you, because we got this on the morning show. I believe somebody texted in last week. They threw in Tolvanen. I'm like, no, you're not giving up Elie Tolvanen to get rid of Matt Duchesne's contract. But then they brought up Rem Pitlick. And I was willing to go there because it's been three seasons now, or I should say two plus seasons now with Rem Pitlick, where you're waiting, you're biding time. Obviously, there's been some patience there for Pitlick. But if you don't feel like he's going to be a top six forward and you think that his ceiling might be third line, then I'm probably willing to part with Rem Pitlick because we have seen a handful of forwards in this system through the years that have been just like Rem Pitlick and they haven't really panned out. Like Vladislav Kamenev at one point was a big prospect for the Preds, or maybe not big prospect, but someone that was intriguing. He hasn't done squat in Colorado. So I think I'd be willing to part with Rem Pitlick, even though that is a piece in the cupboard for 3-4 years down the road that you might be banking on, if that meant that Seattle would take Matt Duchene. For the same reason of what you're saying, Gover, of an expansion team, you don't have many pieces in the cupboard. Whether Rem Pitlick starts on your NHL roster next year in Seattle or not, he's someone that they can help bring along in this process and be a piece for them after some of these players on expiring contracts through the expansion draft, after they leave, Pitlick could be someone that is on their roster in a couple of years.
I think Pitlick's an interesting choice. And I too would go there, by the way. What we're basically getting down to here, and the fans have to ask themselves this question when they're kind of throwing these names out, right, left, right. Tolvanen, first round pit, right, all this stuff. Fabro, for me, right? If you're a fan and you're trying to throw these names out, what you have to ask yourself is one question. Would you be willing to keep Matt Duchene and all that he is if it meant getting rid of player X? That's what you have to decide. Tolvanen, I am willing to keep Matt Duchene on this roster at $8 million a season if it means keeping Tolvanen. Right now I am. Now, next year, if Tolvanen's more of a streaky player and doesn't put up, 20 goals or whatever, that maybe we have a different conversation. But that's not for next season. The Seattle expansion draft is happening this summer. So you have to make a choice off of that. And I think Rem Pitlick is an interesting one because, yes, while I would agree with you, Porth, and I would say, okay, fine, we'll give you Pitlick, I would caution the Predators against offering Pitlick because he had 20 goals at the AHL season, AHL level with Milwaukee, his rookie pro season, right, 20 in 63 games. But if you remember, those 20 goals came in the last 40 games of the season. It's kind of like it clicked for him, and all of a sudden he was lights out. And then in Chicago this year, in his abbreviated cup of coffee at the AHL level, he was a goal per game, not point per game, goal per game player. 8 goals in 8 games, 10 points. So while I'm certainly not saying AHL success translates to NHL success, ask Cal O'Reilly. So, right, there's plenty of cases that they don't translate exactly. But my point is that he has goal scoring. He has a suggestion of goal scoring at the pro level. What does this team need right now? Goal scoring. So I'm not as... It wouldn't excite me as much. I would rather hold on to Rem Pitlick. I wouldn't offer him up. Okay. But certainly if Seattle's like, we'll take Rem Pitlick, then the answer is yes.
If Seattle in that negotiation says, we don't want Carrier, we want Pitlick.
And the answer is yes.
And it basically comes down to Ron Francis looking at David Poile and saying, if you give us Rem Pitlick, we will also take Matt Duchene. If it comes down to that exact conversation.
Yes.
And I'm David Poile, I would say, okay.
Yep, then the answer is a few Nashville people who are really high on Rem Pitlick will go buy themselves a Pitlick Kraken jersey.
There you go.
That means, yes, you go right ahead.
Well, and then you don't give up your first or even second round pick. So you still have...
You've got your defenseman depth based on what we just talked about. You've got Fabro and Carrier.
Correct.
So you can kind of see where both of those careers... You have what their trajectory is. You don't have to kind of make that choice either. So, but I would also throw in this log on the fire too, Porth, real quick, is that Pitlick's going to be a cheap option for you for at least a couple seasons, right? So
totally.
If you're thinking of salary cap implications later on down the road, Pitlick's a pretty good, probably a Colton Sissons type number, and you could definitely digest that if you're Nashville Predators.
You could also digest in trade for what you're saying. you can certainly digest getting $8 million off the books. That
agreed.
Last season was pretty much dead weight on this roster for the most part. So definitely some interesting conversations to be had for sure. And I think we're going to be talking about it every week leading up to the expansion draft. So if you're getting tired of it, I'm sorry. We're not going to stop talking about the Preds approach in the expansion draft. And we talked about the defense, but I think there's a lot of question marks at forward going into next season for the Nashville Predators. What are those question marks? And what is the future of someone like a Victor Arvidsson, or even on the lesser extent, Rocco Grimaldi? We'll get into that coming up next. He's Jeremy K. Gover, making his return to Preds Insiders. I'm Ryan Porth. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders. ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth, Jeremy K. Gover here with you. Yes, Gover, you're not listening to a replay of a 2019 show. This is June 21st, 2021 here on Preds Insiders, and Jeremy K. Gover hanging out. We're having a lot of fun talking all things Preds in this hour. And at forward, Gover, there are a lot of question marks. We just talked about one of them, Matt Duchene, last segment, and whether or not he's going to end up with the Seattle Kraken through the expansion process. And the other name that goes hand in hand with Matt Duchene is Ryan Johansson. And you brought up the fact that since Ryan Johansson has been a playoff performer for the Predators in his time here in Nashville, and the fact that he's woven within the fabric of this team already, that Johansson's $8 million is easier to stomach than Duchene's $8 million, I would 1,000% agree with that. I think the next layer question at center is, what if Matt Duchene comes back next season? What if he's on this roster? Then you're going to have to make a decision on Mikael Granlund. Mikael Granlund, a pending free agent, his best work with the Predators was at center down the stretch this year under John Hines, where he was the second line center. So do you bring back Granlund at that point? If so, are you bringing him back to be a center? Would you then be essentially permanently moving Duchene to wing? I don't think that's what you signed him to an $8 million contract for. So I think that is an interesting branch to this tree that starts with Duchene and Johansson.
So first of all, just backing up real quick, which you're never supposed to do on radio, and I apologize, but the Duchene trade to Seattle, however you can kind of get that to work, we talked about last segment, that fixes this problem. Right, so Granlund could stay at center, assuming he comes back, of course, and then you don't have that problem with Duchene. Second thing I'll say is what you just used the words. I don't think that's what you signed Matt Duchene for. Well, let me retort and say you didn't sign him for 20 points a season either.
No.
Right? So he's got to be better. And the bottom line is this, and this goes hand-in-hand with the David Legwand anger, so to speak, from some fans with Matt Duchene, et cetera, even Ryan Johansson to a certain extent. What causes the ire from fan base and the maybe kind of sternly worded columns from the media? It's expectations. So Matt Duchene is a 48-point player over his career. 48 points a season. So if you have that expectation at $8 million, you're more willing to be like, all right, well, you know, he's kind of a 40-point guy. It kind of sucks, but all right, he is what he is. But you don't have that. You have a completely unreliability. You have no idea when he's going to show up. He is only not low on the Preds' goal list last year because he had those two goals in the season finale in a game that meant nothing. Okay, so otherwise, Tanner Janot would have had more goals than Matt Duchene had he have not scored those two goals in those meaningless games. Now, he did also have that overtime winner that was pretty gorgeous in the playoffs, right? So if you had more of that, the expectations would be higher and they'd be more well-placed. With Ryan Johansson, you don't have that problem. Yes, in the regular season, he needs to be better. That's fair. But you know what you're getting in Ryan Johansson. You're more willing to stomach the $8 million a season knowing that he plays his best hockey in the playoffs. and knowing that the team looks better and has better zone entries and all those things when he's on the ice, whether he's effective production-wise or not, your team is better with Ryan Johansson in the lineup. You cannot say the same with Matt Duchene. So that answers that question. The other thing I'll say real quick is that the forward group is an interesting one, because here's my roster, opening night roster, as of right now. Cousins, Forsberg, Granlund re-signed, Howler re-signed, Yarncroak, Janot re-signed, Johansson, Cunnan, Pitlick re-signed, Sissons, Tolvin re-signed, Tomasino, Trennan, and there's always some rogue UFA that comes up and gets signed out of nowhere. So that's your forward group for me. That leaves off Arvidsson, and it leaves off Duchene. Duchene we talked about. Expansion draft. How do you get him to go to Seattle? Arvidsson's a tougher one. Is he on the decline? If you believe he is, you've got to strike. You've got to trade him for something before all of a sudden it's summer 2022. He had 8 goals. He's hurt all the time.
Right.
And now you can't get anything for him.
No, I 1,000% on board with what you're saying about Victor Arvidsson. And this potentially could be the last offseason where he has trade value.
Right.
Like, I would say your scenario of an 8 to 10 to 12 goal season where he misses X number of games because of injury is more likely than him bouncing back and getting to the 25 to 30 goal level that everybody fell in love with Victor Arvidsson when he broke the single season record for goals. And he was the little engine that could out there on the ice. But I feel like that engine is running out of steam. You know, and
you could also sweeten the pot to Seattle by offering Arvidsson if you really wanted to.
In addition to Duchene?
Yeah.
Ooh.
If you say, hey, you take Duchene, but we'll give you Arvidsson. Now, that would raise a lot of red flags in Seattle's camp. Like, well, why are you offering a former 3-time 30 goal scorer? I mean, you know, there's those questions, right? But if they bring him up and you truly believe that he's on the decline, that's a possibility as well.
They would have to know the red flags. If you're Seattle and you have good pro scouts, they would have to know the red flags in Arvidsson.
Of course.
Duchene and Arvidsson? I mean...
But again,
it's over $12 million in cap space. Yeah.
Yeah, this is from the Predators' perspective now, right? If you think that he's on the decline and you worry that you can't get something for him later, he might be the trade chip you need to get Matt Duchene off the books. And are you willing to do that? Now, optically, from a fan perspective, that looks like a tremendous overpay. But again, if you're the organization and you know, or you believe, that's a better word, if you believe he's on the decline and he's got more of those 8-goal seasons in him as opposed to a 25-goal season, you may consider that as well.
Well, I think the trade-off there is, under that scenario, you better have Forsberg and Ekholm re-sign long-term.
That's true.
Seriously. Like, if you are...
Well, and Granlund. And Granlund re-signed.
I wouldn't go as far as Granlund being a need long-term versus Forsberg and Ekholm. I would say Granlund is a distant third on the priority list there.
I would agree with that.
If you're going to rid yourself $12 million through 12 plus through giving Seattle Duchene and Arvidsson, I think the turnaround has to be you're signing Forsberg and Ekholm long term, and that the trade rumors go away, and that those two that are a lot more reliable in what they do versus some of the other highly paid players on this roster, I think that would have to be almost like the trade off in terms of cap space. And if you're throwing Arvidsson in there, you're essentially giving up the opportunity to get, as Adam Vingan put it a couple weeks ago on this program, a couple of middle round picks. You're giving up the opportunity to get that to put Arvidsson with Duchene. But man, that.
But it goes right back to my point with the question you have to ask, which is, what are you willing to keep Duchene for? And if Seattle comes at Nashville with, we'll take Arvidsson. I mean, if you're looking to unload him anyway, and that's what's going to be the sticking point, I think you have to do it. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying Nashville should offer him up. I'm just saying because you're right. If he can get an asset from Columbus or from, you know, whatever, or Edmonton or whatever, then of course you get an asset back. You don't just trade out $8 million in salary for it. But I'm saying though that if Seattle comes to you and says, all right, well, we'll take Arvidsson too, you may have to consider that.
Hmm. See, I just don't see Seattle doing that, though. And I know you're throwing out a hypothetical in that you're not saying that they absolutely would do that. I just don't know if Seattle would do that. I don't know if the pro scouts, are they going to go back to Ron Francis and say, let's absolutely take a chance that Victor Arvidsson is going to bounce back here? Like,
no, but Victor Arvidsson is affordable $4.2 million for two more years at that rate. And you could possibly get a 20-goal scorer out of it. I mean, that in today's NHL, that is tremendous. So if you're the scouts and you think, okay, with a full season of our conditioning and this and that, you know what? Yeah, I don't think they start there, but I certainly think it's not off the table.
Interesting.
It's not like he makes $8 million, right? It's not like Forsberg's contract eventual contract, right? It's $4.25 million that was signed a while ago. So he's still a bargain for what his proverbial ceiling is. If he gives them an average season of 15 to 20 goals, $4.25 million in this landscape is pretty good.
Yeah, on the open market, you're paying more for that production.
Correct.
Yeah, he's under contract for three more seasons through 2024. I mean,
you're correct. I read 21-22 wrong. I thought that was last. Sorry. Yes, you're right. Three more seasons.
It's an interesting thought, one that I hadn't thought of. I don't know if I have a true opinion on that one, if on that scenario or not. Now, you know, a couple other forwards that I don't know if they're in the plans for next year. Like, I don't know if you can get Seattle to take Rocco Grimaldi. Like, I don't think Grimaldi holds that kind of value where you can say, hey, please take Duchesne, and also we'll throw in Rocco. Like, Rocco's not going to be the pot sweetener for Seattle that makes that happen, even though I would be surprised to see Rocco in a Prez uniform next year.
No, he's not the kind of pot sweetener, but I will say, is there a better location for Rocco Grimaldi to go?
No.
I mean, think about that. For him, right? I mean, this guy has struggled latching on someplace in his entire NHL career, first because he was short or small, next because, you know, whatever it is, right? And he finally sticks in Nashville. He has that brutal contract arbitration hearing thing. And then John Hines gets hired, and he can't find the lineup. And then when he does find the lineup, he blows it up, or at least he looks good doing it. And then he still can't get in the lineup when the playoffs come around, which you could have argued could have used his work ethic. Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of things in there. So my point is, a fresh start for Rocco with a full-time shot in Seattle, an expansion team where there's no real pressure, hypothetically, that's a pretty good spot for him to go and really find himself in his career.
Yeah, you bring up some good points. Rocco, despite his 4-goal game earlier this season, feel like he was a better fit with Peter Laviolette than he has been with John Hines. For whatever reason.
Yeah, no, but the opposite is true. For anybody gets on us for saying that, well, the opposite is true for Mikael Granlund. Mikael Granlund was not a good fit under Laviolette and has thrived under Hines for the most part. So yeah. It just depends. His players' styles, it just depends. My point is that Grimaldi, he's failed to stick forever. It would finally give him a chance to truly do that with a team with no expectations or false expectations if people think they're going to be Vegas.
And it would probably be his last chance to stick somewhere in the National Hockey League. So we are out of time. This hour of Preds Talk just flew by, and it's all because the one, the only Jeremy K. Gover was was co-hosting this evening. Gover, it was real. It was nice. But it wasn't quite real nice.
Ah, flashback. I listened to 50 Cent's Get Up, by the way, the other day. I thought of you, Porth.
I appreciate that. For Jeremy K. Gover, our good friend here on Preds Insiders, hey, appreciate it. Hope everyone in the family's doing well, and don't be a stranger to the show.
I love you, buddy. Thank you so much for having me, and congratulations again.
Thank you. For Jeremy K. Gover, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks for listening to Preds Insiders. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.